Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. We're off hiatus, if you will. We are taping this Thursday, July 25th. I am Doug Kazarian. Coming up momentarily, Preston Johnson. You know him from Daily Wager and previous podcasts. We'll be discussing NBA season win totals posted tonight, courtesy of Caesars. So a lot of excitement here. We unveiled it on the show. We did some SportsCenter content as well. Preston's coming up to do all that. So interesting stuff. We had to post our picks for chalk. So we'll reference that coming up. But we had to each do some write-ups. This is good times. And I know you guys are all looking for some...
Stop. Have a time.
And we will try to deliver that. Yes, Bob Lee lives on, despite his retirement. So a lot to get through. Troy, you're producing. I guess I'm not big time enough to have a regular producer here.
I don't know, Doug. I enjoy when I can fill in, so thanks for having me. We'll see if we can get you a full-time guy soon that we're working on.
It was like, hey, no, I don't want you here kind of thing. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're stepping up. It is just kind of funny. We have a rotating producer here.
Only the best for you, Doug.
All right, man. So what do you say we get to it and try to make our listeners some money?
Let's do it.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
Joining me in studio is Preston Johnson, who was traveling and in studio for Daily Wager for a couple of days, so it worked out well. Preston, how are you, man?
I am good. It's good timing here with these season win totals coming out at the same time, too.
Now, you like a lot. I like a decent amount. This is good stuff. Now, win totals have been out for a little bit by other books. But it's good to get these, and, you know, it's so compelling because this NBA season is going to be different than something we've seen in a few years. We kind of needed that reset, right, with just Kevin Durant leaving, let alone the injuries. Obviously, no one's happy about that. But just there's a level playing field now in the NBA, and I think the stat is we haven't seen a betting favorite +300 or higher since 2008-2009 season. So it's been over a decade since we've seen a less than 3-1 favorite, like a 2.5-1 or even last year, which was an odds on favorite.
And there's a ton of change up just in personnel across the league, which is why I went through, I could bet like half of these season win totals right now. I think if I was in Vegas able to do so, I would be looking at, 11, 12 bets that I would make, some smaller, some bigger. We'll get into some of the bigger ones, but I think it does speak to just how open the NBA and the league is this year. And +300, you said that's the favorite. It's the first time, you know, in a decade. And they shouldn't even be +300. Like, the Lakers should not be +300.
Correct. Good. That's even better point. Right.
Really, it's even more open than that.
Those are skewed. But I would imagine some of the other ones, like the Lakers and the Kobe, were also skewed, too. So I think there's been, like, an assessment across the board on that. Bolt, I have about 7 I'd play. You have about 11. Let's get to it because...
Baby needs a new pair of shoes. Come on.
Shout out again to Bob Lee, who has retired, but he is... voice will live forever here on the Behind the Bets podcast unless people continue to delete the drops. Troy, are we on that now?
We're good. We've got a safe read, Doug.
All right, good. All right, because I have to redo my grid here every time we do the pod. But that's industry talk that happens. All right, so there's a lot of ways to approach it. We can talk about the biggest numbers, the lowest number. Let's just talk about, like, the favorite plays, and I think there'll be enough dialogue, and then it'll stem from that. So if you have, your favorite over-under based on the Caesar win totals, what would you go first?
Okay, yeah, if we were doing like a draft. Kind of
yeah,
like
we did that last year, Windhorse. Yeah. I think maybe we'll revisit this.
Yeah, it'd be fun to do closer to, the season starting. My number one pick, though, right now, it's just the wrong line. It's the Thunder at 28 wins. And I was shocked to see it. I got these like 2 days ago when I was flying here, and I glanced over them and somehow missed this. And I was going through them last night. It's just the wrong line. Like, just to put in perspective, you mentioned there are other spots in the market that have numbers up. It's 35.5 at other locations right now. And so I think it is just the wrong line. Sure, they lost Paul George. They lost Westbrook. But the roster as a whole is still much better than a 28-win team. And you look, Chris Paul, he dropped off last year. He's not nearly as good, but he's still an impactful point guard. He can run pick-and-roll offense with Steven Adams, which is all the Thunder do anyway. And then they have guys like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander that they did get in the trade, who I think is a promising rookie, can defend, one through threes. He's very – he didn't turn it over very often. Like 1.5 turnovers a game for a rookie point guard. He's, a veteran almost now. He runs an offense They got Daniil Gallinari in that trade as well, who can be a stretch four that really the Thunder have never had, which would be beneficial along a guy like Steven Adams in that front court. And they still have, you know, like Nerlens Noel, Terrence Ferguson, Andre Roberson, who's one of the best on-ball defenders, wing defenders we've seen in the last decade, finally healthy and supposed to play. Everything lines up for me. So just to put it into perspective, again, the Suns line is 27. The Thunder are 28. They have like two all-stars. Like Gallinari was a borderline all-star last year. I know Chris Paul may just not want to play on this team. He may get dealt midseason. 28's way too low, though.
Where would you bet if this was 36 like it is at other places, 35.5?
That's a pass, but I think I'm like 36.7. I actually
see, that's interesting because I think it would be under 36 would be my favorite play. If I could get 36, wow. Like injured. So you mentioned those guys. Like, are they going to start three point guards with SGA, Chris Paul, and also Schroeder?
Well, no, Schroeder will come off the bench. I didn't even mention him. He'll be like their sixth man off the bench like usual. Roberson will play that small forward. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander played with Shamet last year. I mean, Shamet's an undersized, kind of like
he's
Fred
VanVleet.
He's a two,
though. He's a two.
Technically, but he's 6'2".
Right, but he's a short two.
But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, like, his wingspan, I think, is like 6'9" or 6'10".
Nice,
like, he can guard threes. Like, he's very versatile. I don't think people realize how good he could potentially
be. That's
fair. He's a very versatile defender.
I just think Chris Paul's not going to survive there if he doesn't get traded. I think he's going to only play half the season. I think it's a dysfunctional situation.
It absolutely could happen.
I don't think like just below 500 is a good line. I would have made the line like 32, and I think there's a chance they don't get 30.
Which, even if you think it should be around 32, 28, four games discrepancy in a season win total is pretty big.
Especially like four games at that
at a lower total.
Right, a lower total.
You would still be betting over 28.
I would. Yeah. I would, but I was hoping to get 35 and pound the under. Like, I
you can
but
do both.
I like the guys. Yeah. To your point, to everything you said, I agree with. I like Gallinari. I really think SGA has a nice future. I like Schroeder off the bench and stuff like that. I love Chris Paul, but the Chris Paul that I wanted the Lakers to trade for a decade ago, not this version of CP3, who's not that. I just think in the West, I think they're on the decline. I think they're gonna win about 29 games-ish. I don't think they'll get to 30. If they do, I wouldn't be shocked, though. But I would bet under 35.5 if I could so fast. That would be my favorite play.
I think they're right under a 500 team. I think they try to show that they're still a playoff-worthy team. They have so many assets anyways now stocked up. They don't really have to tank.
They're rebuilding, though.
They're Are they?
I think they
but
are.
They have to in a sense that they're getting all these assets, but then you put the roster out
there. Sam Presti
op-ed. They could be an 8 seed or 7 seed.
I think they're flipping going for the future.
You wouldn't be surprised if they ended up beating out like the Spurs to get a playoff
That's
spot.
See, the Spurs team, it's funny you mentioned them. I think they could really be bad next year.
That's what everyone said last year. And you know I was the only one that said over. Don't bet against Popovich until it happens.
I said I'll believe it when I see it too, but they could be bad. Well, look, let's shift to the other teams and we'll kind of get back to the Spurs as to why maybe and why I think the West is going to be so tough. I like the Jazz. That's probably my favorite play. I have an over and an under is my two favorite plays. The over is the Jazz. Every season, there's one team that just takes things way too seriously, right? Like, it's like that scrimmage where the guy's like guarding the ball at full court.
I like the way you put that.
So the Rockets, 2 years ago when they got the Chris Paul trade, they're like, all right, we're all in. We got to get home court against the Warriors. We had a shot in the arm, rejuvenated, and they went balls to the walls, and they got that one seed. Last year, it was the Bucks. New coaching staff, everyone excited about the three-point dependent offense, and Giannis was a freak, and they went all in and got the one seed. I think the Jazz are that team this year because they underperformed last year. They were really inconsistent. No one could kind of figure them out, and this is their chance. This is their window, and they went out and got Mike Conley and Bojan Bogdanovic, who were like the two guys they exactly needed, perfect complements to their other players, and also filled the gaping holes that they had. So I think they're going to be good. They're already good defensively. I think they screwed up last year in terms of just, I don't know how to say, there's like an almost like a hangover based on the early success and they just weren't ready for the big games. They weren't ready for the high stakes that it took to be a top four team. And I think over 52.5 is the play here.
So let me throw some numbers at you. First and foremost, this is my second favorite win total out of the whole group. So I'm on board with you 100%. Last year, the Jazz won 50 games.
That's surprising because it felt like they won less.
Less, yeah. In the beginning of the year, they started really slow. They got really hot down the stretch. Now, their schedule was pretty lopsided where it was really brutal for 2 months. It got easier as the season went along post-All-Star break. But if you look at just their point differential over the course of the season, they had the biggest discrepancy in projected wins, and ESPN has like a relative percentage index on expected wins. Their production, they were a 56-win team. That six-game discrepancy led the entire NBA. Now, they only won 50 games. So, production-wise, they were more like a 56-win team. Then they had to play the Rockets in the playoffs in the first round, which was pretty unlucky, in my opinion. The Jazz had the second-best net rating in the Western Conference behind just the Warriors. They were plus 5.2.
Remarkable.
They were the second best team in the West. They were the fourth best team in the NBA behind the Bucks and Raptors. Those are the other two.
Now, I think some of that's inflated. And I know we've talked about this on previous pods, but I just think when these Eastern Conference
the altitude teams, thing.
Well,
yeah.
it's
which they get to do though.
Effort
every,
compounded
every
by the
season.
So I think it's the altitude, but it's not just that. I think this is my sort of amateur psychologist that you kind of need right. that degree to handicap the NBA is that these teams go on like 6-game road trips, right? And this is not like altitude in the NFL because every game matters so much more. This is like you're on the six game West Coast road trip and they just kind of like phone it in that some of those games in the Denver and Utah. It's why those home records never sustained in the playoffs.
Which, if you're right, that will be the case again in this regular season. It's always
even more
the case.
So.
Yeah.
So I think these teams will be like, let's mail it in Utah because they're so good.
Personnel wise, real quick before we move on, their main issue last year they addressed was spacing and 3-point shooting. Donovan Mitchell was pretty inefficient because he had to run the offense with three non-shooters on the floor like Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert, Ricky Rubio. Favors and Rubio are out. They brought in Mike Conley in the trade, and they brought in Bogdanovich, who both of those guys can stretch the floor. And now you can just have Rudy Gobert be that defender, defensive player of the year. He already is anyways. And they have guys now that can just shoot the ball.
Rubio was a nice player, but he couldn't even play crunch time because he couldn't shoot. Now right. you have Mike Conley.
And they literally would dare him to shoot 12 threes. It's incredible. The Rockets would just let him shoot threes.
Right, and
30%.
Everyone said, oh, it's a bad matchup to Houston. No, they're just not that good.
They just didn't have enough shooters.
They just didn't have enough
when it
came to the playoffs.
Defended them correctly.
Correct.
So it wasn't
a bad matchup problem. It was a personnel problem.
They snag guys like Jeff Green, Ed Davis off the bench. They're really deep. I think they're going to be really good.
They have a good front office. They have a good coach, and they made all the right moves this offseason.
You made the comp to the Bucks, the Rockets last year. I think the best comparison is, for me, they're going to be the Denver Nuggets of last season that almost got the one seed in the West. That was just better than people expected right off the bat, and you know they have that altitude advantage.
Right, but Denver came out of nowhere. This was a team that's been around.
I don't think people would. I think most general audiences would be shocked if the Jazz were the one seed in the West this year.
Correct. So that's fair. But I was just saying the comp that I would like counter is that Denver the previous season missed the playoffs, but like this team, sort of like a fringe contender that got the right pieces is now going all in because they want a season opportunity. What's your next one?
I'll go with Nets under 47. So. This would be my third pick if we were drafting.
This,
I'm actually shocked by the number. Check this stat out. So players that played at least 500 minutes for the Nets last season and had a positive on-court net rating. Ed Davis, Trevion Graham, Damari Carroll, Shabazz Napier, Jared Dudley, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Alan Crabb, and then D'Angelo Russell. What do all those players have in common?
I know the answer to this.
I told you yesterday. I won't steal your thunder.
Right.
None of them play for the Nets anymore. It's a big deal. Your only positive impact players from last season that were regular players, at least to some degree. I mean, guys like Jared Dudley, Napier weren't even that regular. They're not on the team. And I know the KD and Kyrie hype is deserved. They're going to be really good in 2 years when KD can come back. There's still question marks about Kyrie and what he brings as far as continuity within a team, his health concerns. I looked because we talked about it yesterday. The last 4 years, he's averaged 63 games played a year. His career is 63.5 games played per year. So 8 years, he plays 75% of a season. So there's concerns there. They spent $40 million on DeAndre Jordan because he's KD's friend, which is fine, but he had a noticeable drop last year in production where he's not a positive impact center, which now is going to take minutes away from their young positive impact player, in my opinion, this year, Jared Allen. They're just not – they only won 42 games last year. Expected wins, they were 41-41. They actually got outscored over the course of the season by 6 points. They're basically a league average team. They're in the East, so they made the playoffs. You know, they won a couple games against the Sixers. It was great. There's a lot more to go on. To win 48 would just be shocking to me. I have them projected 43.4 wins right now, so quite a big edge.
I also did a write-up for this team, and I'm also on the under. This is one of the questions, like, who bets over on 47 for the Nets?
the people on the East Coast that...
Wait, like no, I'm serious. Nets. Like, so what's the... I told myself this about 15 years ago. No matter how much I love a bet, there's someone on the opposite side who loves it just as emphatically. So what is their rationale? So I try to play a little devil's advocate,
okay.
Right? Like I think it's a good exercise for every single bet you've ever made. What's the rationale for the opposite side? Durant's going to return early? I mean, maybe. Like Achilles injury?
Sure, it could happen,
his frame? I mean, he's not like DeMarcus Cousins' frame, right? He's Slim Reaper, so... Maybe he comes back early. I don't know. Kyrie's great. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He's back playing near home. I'm just trying to think of the reasons. They have a good supporting cast. Everyone's a year better. Lobs to DeAndre Jordan. Jared Allen's good. I'm trying to think of Caris LeVert. Like
Taurean Prince from the Hawks was a good guy.
I like Taurean Prince. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think, don't they have
But this comes down to Kyrie, who's never demonstrated an ability to lead a team by himself. In fact, he's actually demonstrated the polar opposite.
Right.
Right? And to your point, games played. He's only played more than 67 games once in the last 4 years. That's 15 games he's not going to play next year. And I just think this guy's like all about Uncle Drew, all about movies. And I don't think he's going to be going gung-ho leading a team that doesn't have Kevin Durant when he's going to be kind of like just – this is almost like a redshirt year in a way. Now, I could be completely wrong, but I don't think his body's going to hold up if he goes all in all the time. Like, I don't think he's capable of doing what Kemba did for the Hornets.
Sure. And even they struggle to get to 500, though. Anyways.
Right.
I will say, I kind of agree with you, and I think it's a good point to make, that you can't quantify will Kyrie mail it in at some point because KD comes back next season. You can't quantify that and put it into a projection. But it definitely is a nice bonus to have on our side that if it does happen, we're betting
right.
under
it's
anyway.
My gut. It's a hunch.
It could happen, and so it goes with us. I'm not betting it because of that.
But all of the tea nice leaves that we've seen, and he's not exactly a glue for a locker room, as we saw in Boston. So there's just a lot of concern there.
Agree.
So that would be one of my plays that we had to write for ESPN Chalk. Another one that I like, and you know I like picking my bad teams to go under, much like the Orioles this season.
So far, so good.
So far, so good. They're getting hot lately. Grizzlies under 25.5. So I like them and I like the Hornets. I'll talk about the Grizzlies. They're just not a very good basketball team, right? Their best player was Mike Conley and they traded him. Even with that said, I was worried that Conley played like half the, he played 70 games. I'm going off memory here, so give me a little wiggle room on that. But I think he played 70 sure. games. They were dead last in scoring and field goal percentage. Dead last. And that he's their best offensive weapon. Now, rookie Ja Morant's going to come in. Now, maybe he's like Trae Young in terms of makes the transition a little bit more quickly than we would expect. We're seeing that across all sports. Rookie quarterbacks, rookies in the NBA are actually a little bit more adjusted, although Trae Young did have some growing pains. Not that they're the same player. I'm just saying he's going to be starting point guard right away. And then Jonas Valanciunas will put up some nice numbers, but he was kind of a weak link in Toronto for as far as I'm concerned. So, like, they have a couple nice players, but are they going to win 26 games in the Western Conference? I don't see how that happens.
So we're in a little disagreement on this one. I have a projection that doesn't incorporate tanking, which you subjectively need to incorporate for teams like this that could potentially just mail it in post-All-Star break. And my 28.6 now becomes like 24 or something like in that range. So under the radar additions that I liked, they got Jay Crowder to help with the depth. They got Tyus Jones, who 2 years ago for the T-Wolves was the second best point guard in defensive real plus minus. His plus minus in general has been really positive. I think last year he was more like seventh in the NBA. So he's a good addition, I think, as well.
But
especially
let me ask
if Morant's struggling.
How's he going to play? Is he going to start?
He's going to come off the bench.
Okay.
I think Morant will get it from the get-go.
My point. So Morant's
but if Morant gets injured
the,
and
play.
They play the rest, I mean, right. They could just scrape some wins out. They also really like high variance play on Josh Jackson, who was a number four pick 2 years ago with the Suns. They dumped him off to Memphis. They have him maybe in, you know, change of scenery. They're deep. They have 10 to 12 guys that can actually play, in my opinion. None of them are all-stars, though, to your point. But I think I would stay away. This is the thing, and I said this to you last night. You could say the same things you're saying about the Memphis Grizzlies right now, about the Kings, who were the consensus worst team in the NBA last year. Anyone you talk to, the Kings are the worst team. They won, what, 36 games or something? You could have said that about the Hawks as well, who ended up winning, I think, 29. So 25.5 is a really low number. I mean, they have to be extraordinarily bad.
So in the last 10 seasons that were not strike shortened, okay?
Okay.
So the last 10 full seasons, there's been, I think, 3.8 teams that went 24 wins or less.
Per season.
Yeah, in each season. Yeah.
Okay.
So like there, we see teams in the teens.
Right.
Last
you
year,
had it last year.
17 Cavs.
Yep.
Right. So the key is this now, to your point, 538 did their projections. And they have the Grizzlies at 35 wins. That's on the aggressive side.
I think their roster could potentially be in that range. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr. is really good. Valanciunas is really good. We'll see about Morant.
Is he? What do you mean by really
Valanciunas?
Good? Like,
I was
their best player. Like, he can't be.
I mean, he was their starting center on really good Raptors teams that couldn't beat LeBron. But I mean, he was like a good 20 and 10 guy. Like, he can be your center on a team that needs to win 30% of their games to win 26 games.
Yeah, but if he's your best player, I think you're in trouble.
He might not be their best player. We don't know. So Jaren Jackson Jr. is probably their best player. Morant could be their best player. We'll see. I think it's going to be one of the more fun teams to watch because with the new lottery format changing and percentages getting distributed differently, teams are less inclined to tank.
Correct. We learned that the middle of the pack lottery teams.
You saw teams like the Hawks who didn't care. They just kept winning
anyways.
Those
teams tank.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. I would rather bet Suns under 27 than Grizzlies under 25.5. That's just one. I would bet neither of them. I would not bet either. Sorry. But I think if I had to choose that bottom barrel Western Conference team, I would take Phoenix.
What about Hornets at 24?
They might be the team that wins 16 games.
Unless
Miles Bridges all of a sudden a lot better and Malik Monk and some of their youth. PJ Washington, I think they drafted. It could be rough. But at the same time, I looked back and I said, is Kemba Walker, they won 39 games last year. Is he really worth 15 wins?
Yes. Yeah.
You think he's that good for that team?
Yes.
It could be
he did everything. He scored all the clutch. I just don't think Terry Rozier and Cody Zeller high pick and roll is going to lead to a lot
of... No? You don't like that?
Cody Zeller, I think I can box out.
So, and Terry Rozier is going to shoot 39% from the field. I will say, so the drop-off is 39 wins with Kemba to 24 wins minus Kemba, but adding Rozier and P.J. Washington as a rookie. So in theory, I don't think
they've
that's
lost
a 15
other players,
win.
Haven't they?
I know, I looked back. They have like the exact same team, added Rozier, added P.J. Washington, lost Kemba Walker. That's a pretty big drop-off. Now, the difference is they were trying to be a playoff team last year.
Right.
They're probably not going to be trying in, you know, post-All-Star.
So they're going to start likely Rozier, Batum, Miles Bridges, Marvin Williams, and Cody Zeller.
Yeah, and they still have, like, Gilchrist and Monk. I mean, everyone's still there. Like, it's going to be bad.
Who do they beat?
I think they have the worst roster in the NBA, arguably. Maybe the Cavs. It's one of those two teams.
Well, the Cavs probably are worse if they trade Love.
Yep, which they probably will at some point. Yeah, we'll see.
All right, what do you got?
I'll go with the Rockets over.
I like
which is weird to like two Western Conference teams that are in that kind of top tier to go over the total. But they won 53 last year, all right, and they started horribly. I think that first 2 months, I mean, they weren't even in the playoff. It might have been more like 6 weeks, but they were like the 9 or 10 spot in the West. And then CP3 got hurt and missed 20-something games, and Harden had to average 40 for a couple weeks. Their expected wins number was 55 wins, though, so they actually underachieved based on some of those metrics. But I don't think people realize how much Chris Paul actually dropped off, which I guess you're saying, well, that goes against your Oklahoma City number. I mean, it's 28 wins for Oklahoma City.
Right.
What do you think he shot from the field last year? Because he's always been like a really efficient
44%.
He dropped to 41.9. And everyone's like, well, Russell Westbrook's an inefficient volume shooter. How's he going to work with the Rockets? He shot in his down year last year 43% from the field. He actually was a better shooter just overall from the field, and he gets to the line more often than Chris Paul. And I think Russell in general is just more athletic. He's obviously more explosive. He can rebound the ball better. He's better in pick and roll and probably isolation just because, you know, Chris Paul is too old to take guys off the dribble. Russ can still take guys off the dribble and get fouled or get to the basket. And they're going to probably pick up the pace a little more and push in transition, which they were horrible in transition opportunities last season. And he's obviously way more durable. Chris Paul misses games all of the time. I wrote here, the three of the last 4 years, Westbrook played at least 80 games. Last year was the fewest games he played was 73 games he still played. So you can count on him to actually play more games. And then the one contact I had a dinner with someone that works in the NBA about 2 weeks ago now. And the week before that, he said he had a dinner with Daryl Morey. And Morey said the one reason he thought that last season got away from them was because they didn't take the regular season seriously. And they started so slowly, and they had to play from behind from the get-go. And then they wore Harden down, and then come playoff time, they were just all beat up. And I think some of that goes into the fact that now they have a team, and they're like kind of rejuvenated, that the guys like each other. Kind of like what you were saying with Utah, are these teams that kind of have like a reset button and then just go, you know, all out. They understand they need to probably be, or at least try to get that one spot in the West to have the best shot at winning a title next year. They're not going to take these regular season games lightly. I think you still have Eric Gordon, P.J. Tucker,
and Westbrook's not going to let him.
Well, he won't let him either. No, he's a different animal.
It's infectious, and you've played sports. I've played sports. There is something to that. I mean, look, I was not a Tim Tebow should be an NFL quarterback guy, but all the criticism of the time, I would say this. When he would, like, lower his shoulder when he went around this corner instead of running out of bounds like most quarterbacks, he drilled a DB, that is infectious and rubs off
everyone on
like, the
sideline.
Defenders, and they're, like, it just, and especially a sport like the NBA, where there's 82 games and stuff like that, and there are some like flat spots and teams just check out a couple times, or we've seen it a million times in the association. And I think Harden's a guy who probably needed that from Chris Paul, right? He's a guy who has that edge, that's tireless sort of work ethic, or at least the competitive fire. I think Westbrook's going to fill that void with trading Chris Paul. And I do think, like, I've been a big critic of Westbrook. I just don't think he's going to ever win a title as the number one player. But if he's the second best player on a champion, he could have. In fact, that the comeback against the Warriors, when they were up 3-1, the Warriors came back. Like, that team probably wins the title
otherwise.
And, and Durant's the best player. So, like, if Westbrook's your number two, I think you can do it as long as he stays within the system, removes a few bad shots a game. Also, there's a Westbrook post-up game that is really intimidating for opposing defenses. And if he can post up back down guys and then kick it to shooters as opposed to what the Thunder had last year, that's a very effective offensive set. So I think D'Antoni, I'm a big D'Antoni guy, he will figure out a way to make it work. And maybe his shot's going to improve because Houston turns all these guys who can't shoot into shooters, like Nene is bombing threes last year. So maybe Westbrook's going to develop a decent outside shot.
I think he was like 29% last year. I would bet over 29% from three this season.
And they're going to be open. And he's playing with an MVP caliber player.
And again, they only need to get to 52. They won 53 last year. Their numbers projected more like a 55 win team. And I think they're probably better. In the West, you know, it's stacked. I get that. But the Rockets won't take the regular season lightly this time.
And there's so much, you know, they talk about the team that's labeled as underrated so much they become actually overrated.
Yeah.
The opposite is for Westbrook, right? He's so criticized that I think he's like.
But he's still probably a top 25 guy.
Right, the needle needs to come back a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's my thought. So good call there. I'm with you there. Let's talk about the Lakers. We've waited long enough. I like the under here. I was hoping it'd be higher. So I might actually wait on this. I just don't see
I don't think you need to be in a rush either.
Yeah, so I think I'd wait here. But, again, being a Laker fan, being a LeBron guy, so to speak, I've kind of watched and observed, and I don't think this Lakers team is going to take the regular season like we just talked about with the Rockets and Jazz. I think this is a team that knows they may not have the best roster per se, but they probably believe they have the two best tandem in the NBA, and they're like, yeah, come try to beat us 4 out of 7. And LeBron's old, coming off the coming off the most significant injury of his career. AD, now there's a narrative out there that like AD is hurt all the time. He actually played a lot of games those last two seasons, except for this past year.
Last one, and then he just took
which
the
was just
year
like
off,
checked out. Yeah, like that's all folks T-shirts and stuff. So his last two seasons where he tried. Now, granted, that's a separate conversation whether or not that was appropriate. But I'm just saying for the Lakers here, I think they're going to be on cruise control to a certain extent. I wouldn't be shocked if they get like the 5 seed and just said, LeBron doesn't care. He's won a road game in every damn playoff series for the last decade. And they're just going to be right come playoff time. And they want to peak at the end of the season. They may add a guy midseason, whether it's Iguodala or whatnot. I just think there's a lot of more uncertainty than like, just because they added better pieces than they did last summer around LeBron doesn't mean they're still good pieces around him. Like, yes, they don't have Lance Stephenson. Yes, they don't have Michael Beasley. And they got guys who are nice compliments.
They definitely are better, yeah.
Right, the right fit. But that doesn't mean they've sort of figured out the substitution patterns in an optimal way. Doesn't mean that, like, everyone – like, there's a lot of moving parts there, and I don't think it's going to be smooth from day one.
So I project out basically right on the number, which I believe you said is 52.5?
Correct.
Okay, so I think the sheet – did the sheet say 51.5?
Oh, yes. I'm looking at the sheet now. The sheet says 51.5.
Okay, so we'll go with 51.5 because that's more likely the number. And,
okay.
And I projected out like right at 51 wins. And that assumes, you know, LeBron, I think I projected him to play like 83% of the years, like 70 to 72 games, and Anthony Davis in the same number. But there's a chance you're right. Maybe they play more load management and both guys only play like 60. And they know they're going to make the playoffs either way. It's definitely possible. I think the team is better outside of those two guys than people give them credit for, and I'm more worried about those two guys actually being as good as, you know, LeBron and Anthony Davis could potentially be. That's going to, you know, time will tell with them. I think Danny Green was a great pickup. I think Kuzma is kind of a guy that Lakers fans overrate, everyone else underrates. So
somewhere in the middle.
He's probably somewhere in the middle, but like it's hard to find guys that can just drop 40 points in a game. Kuzma's done it. He's like 22, 23 years old. He scored 41 last year in a game. He doesn't defend
Andre
that
Miller
great,
did it
but
as well.
One of the best point guards of all time. Utah graduate, too,
the
by the way.
The professor.
Alex Caruso, future Andre Miller.
I'm trying to think of the other. Didn't Tony Delk drop 50 as well?
Delk?
Or, I think so.
Yeah, that could have. That sounds familiar. There's a few guys, like Jordan Crawford did it recently. I think a couple years ago he had 50, and he does it every game in like Europe right now. But Avery Bradley's a fine pickup. Quinn Cook can, you know, space the floor. They brought in Dudley, who's like a good veteran presence.
I mean,
like that type
come
of
on.
The guy. But he was like one of the best defenders against Embiid in that playoffs.
I know.
It's funny enough. And then he got ejected in one of the games, and it actually swung the series a little bit.
Like, Robbie, like,
I'll give Dudley some love, but they still have DeMarcus Cousins there. Like, they have pieces, I think, outside of those two that have potential. I'd stay away. If you wanted to bet under, I couldn't blame anyone. It might take some time. You know, they could be a 500 team for the first 2 months
and,
of season two.
And how about the coach? Like, Frank Vogel is going to have a giant spotlight. He's got LeBron's camp and then Jason Kidd, the assistant. There might be a coup. Who knows?
People that have known me for a while know that. So I grew up, I'm a Lakers fan, but yeah. I did not like Kobe Bryant very much as a player. I always liked the point guards that can make crazy passes that, like Jason Kidd, Stephon Marbury, I liked a lot, Jason Williams. I loved Luke Walton because he was like, you could see the point guard kind of high IQ, small forward. He would put up like 10 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. When they got him as a coach, like, I loved it. I thought he was going to be the best thing in the world. He wasn't that good of a coach. His schemes, X's and O's stuff, like, he needed help. The assistants weren't very good. Coaching staff's definitely an upgrade over what they had. So I would not, I know there'll be a spotlight.
I like Luke Walton. I thought he did a good job 2 years ago. I think
Vogel will be really good.
I think last year was impossible.
Well, that was impossible either way, but even the years
prior.
Don't
forget LeVar Ball either. Like, he was part of that mix yesterday.
He is gone now.
Yeah. So there's a big upgrade there. All right, you're up next. Do you have anything else standing up?
I have one that I wasn't expecting to like as much, and then I dove in. My projection is 52 wins exactly, and it's the Pacers, and their number's 48.5. And there's going to be some teams in the East that need to win some games, and I don't think it's going to be the Nets, for example. I've talked about that. Because the Celtics dropped off, the Raptors obviously are going to drop off some. They lost pieces. There's a few other teams. Well, and even like Milwaukee's not going to win 60-plus games again. They lost Brogdon. The Sixers are probably going to be better. But last year, the Pacers won 48 games. Their Pythagorean wins, expected wins, was 51. So they were a 51-win team last year, and Oladipo only played in 36 games. They added, I think, some really good sneaky additions. Jeremy Lamb was kind of this under-the-radar shooter.
Hornets lost him.
Hornets did lose him, by the way. You're right. They lost one other person.
Game winners.
Other than Kemba Walker, like that 45-footer that he heaved up. Yep.
Toronto.
They traded, like, for TJ Warren, which people are like, well, actually, let's see what Warren does when he's not in, like, you know, the Phoenix Suns. Which,
playing the five.
Right. Like, TJ Warren's a good addition, in my opinion. And then they got Malcolm Brogdon, who I think was one of the more impactful players for the Bucks last year. And we saw.
Well, I'm going to interrupt. What's the timeline for Oladipo's return? Because that's what this comes down to.
I think he's already, like, practicing and stuff. Whether they let him.
I thought it's, like, late December.
No, because he only played in 30 games. He got injured earlier in the year, and ACL isn't necessarily a full year anymore. So I think he's not like full practice 5-on-5, but we can check it out right now. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's ready to go in the first few weeks of the season. I would anticipate, my point though anyways was that he only played in 36, and they were a 51-win team as far as their production was concerned. They won 48, and a lot of these guys on their team, like Sabonis and Miles Turner, like they're a year older and better on top of it, and the East as a whole just got a little bit worse. So I think 48.5 was too low. I project 52.0 exactly. It's a 3.5 win discrepancy. I like the Pacers.
I'm surprised I didn't jump on this because I really like this Pacers team. I really like Oladipo, and that's a team that also takes the regular season seriously. I think they're really well coached. I don't think McMillan gets enough credit. How they were swept by the Celtics is really weird. They were like leading 3 of the 4 games in the second half. It wasn't a full blown sweep that it appeared. And Oladipo's been great, right? Was he in the MVP discussion?
The year prior, you mean?
Or just, like, you know, a month into the
season? He was, like, most improved player, for sure. And then he probably was top 10 in the MVP voting.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there was a lot of buzz around him, just given what he was doing. He transformed his body. So I think he's awesome.
So the latest report is that there's still no timetable on his return.
Right, that's what I'm reading.
It could be later, yeah.
Yeah, or not necessarily, like, there's uncertainty. It's just they're not disclosing it.
Yeah.
Like, Victor Oladipo doesn't want to divulge, doesn't want to get into that. Just let it continue.
I don't think they're going to be in a rush when it's all said and done. So I can check right now how many games
Miles
are projected.
Turner. Now, they did lose Bogdanović to what we discussed, but I think Miles Turner is going to have a big season, whether it's this year or next. I think he's on the cusp of, like, all-star status.
I think they're the 3 seed. Unless the Celtics make a trade that gets them there. It's one of those two teams. And
I mean, look, Brad Stevens is obviously over-delivered when he's underestimated. So I think it's probably the Pacers, you're right. But I wouldn't be shocked if it's the Celtics.
It's one of those two teams for sure. And I think if you looked back, I didn't do this. I wish I had now. How many teams win at least 49 games that are the top 3 seeds in the East the last decade? And it's usually at least 4. And so, I mean, even if they're the 3 or 4 seed, that's usually a spot where they're getting to that 49 number anyway.
Are you surprised I did not go over with the Detroit Pistons 37.5?
Well, you liked him at 100-1 or something on the show a few weeks ago.
I said 100-1 to win the East.
It was to win the East, yeah.
I mean, look, Blake Griffin was awesome when he was healthy.
He was really good, actually.
He was really good. So
the problem is the roster just isn't very good.
It's not very good at all. Reggie Jackson's not good.
I looked and I was actually surprised. What did they win, like 39 last year? 40? They snuck into the playoffs.
They won 41. They went 41-41.
I don't know how they won 41. They got Derrick Rose now. That's their key addition,
They have two big guys that are Blake Griffin's really good when he's playing, and then Drummond's been better than people realize.
They added Tony Snell from the Bucks.
I like him. Make Harris can make the leap, if you will.
Svi Mykhailiuk,
yeah,
former Laker.
Big ups. I thought 100-1 in a conference that has really two good teams.
Let me throw a couple more at you where I'm not sure if you read through this.
I did. So I want to ask you, so some of the popular teams. Let's talk Pelicans.
Okay.
This number, I didn't know what to expect. Actually, so when the Pelicans won the lottery, so the night they won the lottery, everyone was saying playoffs. Playoffs, 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 because they're going to trade Davis, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I was like, or when they traded, I'm sorry, they had the pick, and then they made the trade. That's when everyone was saying playoffs. And I was like, I can't wait to bet the under. But then they added, like, J.J. Redick and Favors. And I'm like, all right, so this team might be actually a playoff team. Because they aren't just a bunch of guys who are loose ends. They have leadership. And then Zion Williamson's the ultimate wild card.
Yes.
I'm passing here. I would lean under. But I'm very curious to see how this Pelican season unfolds the first year. Because I do like Gentry as a coach as well.
So I projected him out to be almost exactly 500. And so the line right now is 39. So I would bet over if I had to. I think that's probably right where they're going to be, is like on the cusp of being a playoff team or not. The J.J. Redick and Derek Favors, people don't maybe realize, and it was one of the reasons the Jazz were so good, they needed to address their spacing and three-point shooting. But Favors had the single best defensive rating in the NBA last year.
I did not know that.
Now, he's on the floor with Gobert a lot, which helped too. But as a whole, he actually was the best defender as far as, you know, how many points his lineups gave up to opposing teams. And they have, you know, Hayes, who they drafted, was really good in summer league. And then obviously all the young Lakers guys like Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, on top of Drew Holiday, who I think is one of the most underrated players, period, in the NBA.
Accurate.
One of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. Like, they're going to be an under team early. I think it's going to be hard to bet unders in the NBA again this season, but one team that I would be confident, we talked about on the show yesterday, before the season, betting blindly against the Lakers every single game. But again, I'm not betting this one, but at 39, it's really close. I think they are a 500 team, but it's pretty high variance play because it is a lot of young guys. Guys that have had injury history like Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball, and then Zion Williamson, what's he going to be as a rookie? We'll see, but it's going to be a fun team, absolutely, obviously, top of the league pass list to watch this year.
And Gentry deserves this after suffering through Anthony Davis's nonsense.
Yeah,
but
he's been good.
Don't be misled by how they finished last year. They were tanking. There was a lot of disarray. Like, now, Randall's good. Like, he, again, this kind of goes to one of those guys who was a motor and a competitive fire that is infectious in the locker room. Like, I think they're going to miss that.
They have like Kenrick Williams and Frank Jackson, who dropped 30 in that opening summer league game against the Knicks in three quarters. They have some of those guys that played a ton of minutes last year in that stretch,
right,
that I think kind of have that motor. Plus, I mean, they're so young, and Gentry does like to play up tempo. I think they'll be fine. I think Randall was maybe more of a benefit of Gentry's system. Fair. He's such a bad defender that it kind of was a wash anyway. That's why they weren't very good. But I think he'll be okay there.
Clippers, 55.5.
I had no idea. My projection out, I used Kawhi 65 games. And that's, I mean,
high.
People don't remember Paul George. Yeah, that's like a great expectation. Yeah. That's because he has a little injury or whatever from playoffs. He was broken down. But he's going to be healthy by start of the season. Paul George, who just had surgery on two different shoulders, may not be completely healthy. He may not even start to start the year. It might be someone else. Now, they're pretty deep anyway, but they lost Gildas Alexander and Gallinari. I passed. My projection came in a little lower, though. It was like 54 flat, and I think it's 55.5. So if I had to, I would bet under, I guess.
You know what 538 has?
But they have, I'm pretty sure it's low.
48 wins.
Yeah. I mean, I think people, tell me, do you think the Clippers were that good last year? People saw them win twice against the Warriors.
I think they were a regular season team. I think they were a team that took the regular season, and the guys like Patrick Beverley and even Doc Rivers, for that matter, were just out coached and outworked other teams in the regular season.
I agree. I think Doc Rivers is a great part of that. They kind of had this sense about him where they wanted to prove people wrong, like somehow. Yeah,
they
for
stuck
some
up
reason,
on people, too.
Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. Like, people were talking about they got Kawhi and Paul
George.
I don't
think people realize how good Lou Williams is.
Then they go, like, Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell off the bench. It's like, yeah, great, but I don't think they're that good. When it's all said and done, those guys can't be.
But they have all your guys from the Oklahoma City Thunder, like your boy Gallinari and SGA. And
I think those two guys are better than Harrell and Lou Williams ultimately could be.
No. Well, could be, yeah, but not. Yeah. I think Lou Williams, I don't think people realize how good he is.
He's a great scorer.
Yeah.
And but if Shamet and
him. It's not flashy, but if it's so easy to do, why can't everyone else do what he does?
If it's Shamet, Lou Williams, Paul George, Kawhi, and Montrezl Harrell, I'm worried a little bit about their defense in two positions. Harrell is a center defending the rim and protecting the rim, and I'm worried about whoever can pick on Lou Williams, which the Warriors did. We haven't seen the Clippers go very deep. We haven't seen Lou Williams go deep in a playoff series, period. You know how Brad Stevens and the smart coaches just pick on the weak link. That's going to be a thing. Now, in the regular season, it might not be as much of a thing. But when it's all said and done, they were—
Regular season, 55.5. You'd go under?
I wouldn't bet it. My projection came in a little lower, and I kept looking. Like, last year, they were a 48-win team. Their expected wins last year, 44. It was one of the biggest overachieving teams from last season. And so for me, and then people saw what they did against the Warriors twice, and then the hype with Leonard and Paul George. It screams under. I wasn't as low as 48. Again, I was only 54. If I had to, I would bet under. But it's going to be an interesting team to follow, even betting game to game, week to week.
What about the Bucks at 57? That's high, but I lean over even just because, you know, they were such a delta from where their season win total was last year, right? That flew over. Okay.
Yes.
So usually you would expect some regression, but I think this team's legit, right? Like, Giannis is in, you know, FU mode and wants to scorch the earth and win MVP again. He's the betting favorite, frankly. And it's a top heavy conference. There's only two really, really good teams. And I just don't see why losing Brogdon's big, but I wouldn't bet under.
So I just read about this like at 1 a.m. and I wasn't sure off the top of my head, but I just looked it up. I have it projected 57.9 wins, which I think is higher than like 538 when you're looking at some of their numbers. I think they had the Sixers actually as the top team
Bucks
in the
54
East.
At 538.
Which, you know, I love the Sixers, and I think it is a two-team race right now in the East. Those two teams are going to win a lot of games. They lost Brogdon, but last year they won 60 games. Their expected wins was,
and he missed games last year, too.
Right, he only played 63.
Oh, he played the whole season, they lose them.
Right. Their expected wins was 64. They were a 64-18 team based on their point differential. I think ultimately the Sixers are going to give them a run for their money come playoff time. But Budenholzer teams, even in Atlanta, always overachieved in the regular season. Like you mentioned last year with the Bucks, just like new team, reset button, new coach, new system. They thrived in it. They're a regular season type team. Budenholzer's kind of been a regular season type coach, even in Atlanta. And then he'd get swept by LeBron in the playoffs. They're going to just go all out, and assuming Giannis plays, say, 70-plus games, you know, they're going to be right there. So for me, it's a pass, but they do deserve to have the highest total, I think, on the board.
Well said. Any other number before I throw one team at you that we have to discuss?
Yeah, the Warriors, right?
That's another team that I forgot about.
So where are you going to go? I mean,
Let's do the Warriors. Let's do the Warriors.
Still the Warriors. It's a 47. Well, the line's 47.
It's a low number. If it were 51, I would be pounding the under. I can't get involved at 47.
Okay, I can. I like the over. Okay. I project 49.6.
All right.
I think people have kind of forgotten about them, which is really strange. They're 15-1 to win it all, which I think is also worth a bet. Like, 15-1 is like something like 7% that they
win
it. All
right, let's come full circle.
6.7%.
What did I say at the beginning of the podcast? No matter how much you love a bet, there's someone else who loves the opposite side.
Yes.
So let's make the case.
Okay, the other side is that Steph Curry and D'Angelo Russell are going to give up 130 points a game.
The backcourt.
As a backcourt.
Just to
the backcourt.
Yeah.
So 160. Yeah, I get that.
Okay, so there's that.
Draymond Green's going to be 25 pounds heavier.
Well, no, I actually think I'm more optimistic that he's going to keep the weight off.
No, I'm playing the other side of the fence.
Well,
no, you're right. I think he will.
But hold on. Can he hit a shot?
He does shoot better from three when he's in better shape.
Okay,
that's fair. He was averaging triple-doubles in the playoffs.
He's got a little playoff Rondo in him. Like, there's regular season Draymond, and then there's playoff Draymond.
He has... Do I care, Draymond? It can be in the regular season too. Like,
correct,
they won 73 games because they wanted to.
Correct. That's
if it's his contract year and everyone's doubting the Warriors, they just lost in the finals. They got, you know, quote unquote screwed by injuries, which has happened to every team. Though seems like the last 6 years. I think that they could try. Steph Curry, I mean, in that Portland series, he averaged 37-8-8.
Is he going to do that over 82 games?
No, but he could do 36-6.
Maybe.
If he's healthy, and Draymond is defensive player of the year, Draymond that's in shape, and it's not like they can't figure out a way to use D'Angelo Russell positively on the offensive side of the ball. And then they got Kevon Looney back for cheap, where I still think
they somehow sent him Bitcoin or something on the side.
Because
and Cauley-Stein.
3 years, $15 million is ridiculous. And then Willie Cauley-Stein to play center or to share the center minutes with Looney. I think they're going to be solid. They lost Iguodala. That's fine.
They're no bench. They lost Livingston as well.
They're going to, I think, ultimately, and what I've heard, and I don't have too many connections in the NBA, but even Karl-Anthony Towns, Instagram a post of a deloading sign, which is D'Angelo Russell's nickname. They're very good friends. He thought that they had gotten D'Angelo Russell. Then the sign and trade happens where we all thought the Warriors were going to lose Durant for nothing. Now they get D'Angelo Russell, who I think midseason the Warriors will trade for a guy that actually fits so that Klay Thompson can play the two spot. Robert Covington can be their 3-and-D guy like Iguodala is, who, by the way, the best five lineup in the NBA defensively last year were T-Wolves, Robert Covington lineups.
Wow.
And then he got hurt and he only ended up playing, I think, like 11 games for them. But in those 11 games, the T-Wolves had the best defensive rating in the league. He, on the Warriors, as a shooter / 3-and-D guy, I mean, he's going to be great. And then they bring in to make the money work Jeff Teague to come in off the bench, because they never really had a backup point guard for Steph, who I think would make the money work and be an okay backup point guard. Or when they go small and play Covington at the 4, Draymond at the 5, their death lineup, they can put Klay, Steph, and Teague in the backcourt. So I think that trade, I'm not betting it because I think that trade is going to happen. I made a point here in my notes that my projection of 49.6 wins is assuming this is their team the entire way. But they have a trade chip in D'Lo to a team like the T-Wolves, for example, that they can improve their roster at some point, or just getting, you know, guys for cheap that want to come play once Klay's getting healthy and stuff. So I think over 47 is the play, 15-1 is the play. Like, what percentage, just in your head, don't do any math, what percentage of the time this year do the Warriors win the championship?
So assuming Klay comes back, and even if it's like a 6-seed, 7-seed that the Warriors could be, and like at the Lakers, and that's the thing that people need to remember. It's not just for the Warriors discussion, but this is for all the teams, all you listeners out there. You don't have to beat every team in the West, right? You just have to beat the three teams that you're going to have to play through the playoffs and then get to the finals. So you don't have to beat the Clippers and the Lakers and the Rockets and the Jazz.
Correct.
If you're the Warriors. Like, you just have to beat a couple of them. Like, maybe you catch Portland, or maybe you catch
Their under, by the way.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe it all kind of breaks your way. Like, Portland got to the Western Conference Finals. It just because they got Denver and they didn't get the Rockets, right? Like, it just kind of – sometimes it breaks your way. So you don't have to run the whole gambit. So, I don't know, like 10% maybe. I got
to
think about it.
Okay, so that would be like 9-1.
Right.
And then 10% might be a little low even.
Right.
I think I was like more like 12%. So, yeah, 15-1 out there on the Warriors. I think it's worth a flyer. You mentioned Portland real quick. They're an under team. 47.5. I know they won 53 games last year. No Nurkic.
Yeah, I think they take the...
They lose Harkless. I know those guys are like, what's Aminu? What's Harkless?
No, those
guys were their kind of like 3-and-D-ish type guys that played in the front court, went small sometimes. I think they need Zach Collins, Anthony Simons, guys like that to really step up.
I mean, come on. That's an unknown.
Right. So for me, and the West did get a lot better, and I project them
out
quite a bit
lower. But they take the regular season so seriously, and they're not quite Denver, Utah with their home court, but they're kind of close.
Yeah, and like you've mentioned, you like Lillard as a potential MVP candidate. He could average 30, and they could be fine.
You can get MVP as a 5-seed,
too. They also could make a trade. I know Bradley Beal, if he's ever on the table, has been talked about getting sent to Portland, which maybe that upgrades them. Like, there's
from McCollum.
There's uncertainty. I've heard that maybe not even in playing all three of them.
3 yards.
Yeah, because you can send Zach Collins, Simons. You have picks.
They have Whiteside.
And you can throw Whiteside in to make money work. Like, they could make it happen where they have like this 3-guard lineup. That's probably the best.
I like Portland. I love their coach. I love Lillard.
They always overperform expectations.
That's my point.
They're kind of like the Spurs in that.
Yeah,
record.
They're like regular season Warriors. Completely.
Yep. And this is like the one time I'm like, I got to just bet under. I think it's way too
high. But I can't fault you. I'm not betting over is my point. Let's wrap it up with the Knicks
at
27. They are the punchline of free agency, and rightfully so. The sadness here in Bristol amongst all the Knicks fans is palpable, and it's justifiable. With all that being said, I kind of like the over.
I know you do. I don't understand why. Tell me why first, and I'll go the other way.
I like their players. Okay, last year they had some really ineffective players, and I like the veterans. They're competent, and we just need 28 wins. So, this lineup, Elfrid Payton as the starting point guard. I guess RJ Barrett has to start, right?
Of course.
Can you go Marcus Morris, Julius Randle, and Mitchell Robinson?
No, that's not enough shooting at all.
See, I think Nick
Payton
Knox,
can't shoot.
Knox
Barrett
stinks.
Can't shoot. Morris kind of can shoot. Randall can't shoot. Mitchell Robinson can't shoot. That would actually, if you are not going to be, when I run a team in 20 years, you are not on my
Well, I want Wayne
committee.
Ellington starting instead of R.J. Barrett. And he can shoot.
Right, he can shoot. That would help quite a bit, but so can Kevin Knox.
And Reggie Bullock. Like,
The starting lineup's going to be Dennis Smith Jr., Kevin Knox, R.J. Barrett.
Can Reggie Bullock start at the point?
Maybe Randall and Mitchell Robinson.
Can Reggie Bullock and Wayne Ellington start
those,
the back?
Those guys are coming off the bench.
Threes.
Those guys are coming off the bench, probably with Marcus Morris and Bobby Portis and Frank Ntilikina.
So they have a lot of parts.
Trier is another one.
They have a lot of guys
like
who should be
man.
Off the bench on the Spurs championship teams. They have a lot of guys like that, right? Ellington, Bullock, Trier, Morris, Randall.
Yes.
But they don't have NBA quality starters. I don't know. I just wanted to play a little contrarian with the Knicks because they're a punchline. I'm like,
they
actually
are.
Got a lot of guys. But you're right. They're going to tank. I like Fizdale, too. Like, that's the thing. I think he's going to make them play. They played hard a lot last
Two
year.
Points real quick. Now that there's an East Coast betting market that exists, I think that's why their number is a little high and the Nets, I think, is really high because that exists.
I disagree with you a little
bit. And they've been in the news, and like you said, they've been a punchline now. But I still think people want to bet Knicks over 27.
I disagree. The famous words of the director, John Murray, from the Westgate, who would say, bettors are bigger fans of their wallet than their teams. So when the Raiders were bad in Vegas, everyone loved fading the Raiders.
But the majority of the new audience to betting these last few years, now that it's getting legalized in the East Coast in certain states, they don't know that yet.
Okay, I think if the Knicks were good, like the Lakers, Laker fans will bet over. But when the Knicks, I think the Knicks fans are so fed up that they will be betting.
They just got R.J. Barrett, dude. No, he was the number one recruit going into Duke last year.
They're completely
demoralized. He was the consensus number one out of high school.
So, do you know Knicks fans?
I don't know the many.
They're
all
around.
They're
all
demoralized. But the ones I've talked to went from demoralized to the next day, like thinking pretty positively, which gets me to my next point. Are they thinking long term? Because then you're right. The Knicks probably should be tanking, trying to get the number one pick because they just need another guy like that to try to eventually recruit a free agent down the road. All these contracts on these new guys like Randall and Portis and Morris are like one plus ones. So they're in a situation where they're supposed to tank. If there was one team in the NBA that needed a tank to try to get it and land another star in the draft and then free agency.
But I just had to bring it. I was like, I wanted to be.
I think you have to bet under if I bet anything on this team.
Okay.
But I'm not. I'm passing.
Well, we
got to
wrap it up. Anything else? Any final team you want to give one little note
outside, on? I'm going to throw one more question at you.
Okay.
Outside of Oklahoma City, because I think the number is just wrong. Like FanDuel has it at 35.5, and it's 28 now when Caesars is going to open this. Outside of them, which total do you think by start of the season moves the most?
It's funny. I was going to ask you that question. So basically, like, which number are the sharps?
Which number is like the furthest from you?
Can I ask you
line?
A question first?
Yeah, go.
When is John Wall expected back?
Oh. Do you think if he ends up actually playing that the Wizards number moves up a bunch? What's it at right now? 26.5?
28.5.
28.5 is what it was?
Like, why can't they be a playoff team?
And they could end up trading Beal. But they also could trade for someone to add. Like, they could trade Wall for, like, Chris Paul. I know that's, like, a rumor with the Thunder.
Why can't they be a playoff team? They were, like, each of the previous years.
The rest of the roster is really bad.
They were playoff team each of the previous years.
I mean, well, they lost Otto Porter Jr., who was, like, their third best player.
And Oubre.
And Oubre's gone. And Gortat was good on those teams.
The Polish Hammer.
Like, they're definitely weaker as a whole. They got my guy Bertans, though, from San Antonio.
So I would probably say the Phoenix Suns would move the most.
Down.
Yeah.
You think people just decide, oh, they're the worst team in the West?
I think
West
there's
stacked.
A sharp move. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think like
ends up closing like 24, 24 and a half.
Yeah, something like that.
All right. That's not a bad pick.
That would be my guess. I mean, yeah, it's hard to move a lot down when you're already at 27. But what would you say? I mean, these numbers are tight. They're not the first ones in the market. There's a reference point, you know, like. That's already kind of a firm market.
You know, I think if there was one, it's the Jazz. I think that like the analytical people love them. I think people that just follow it pretty closely, NBA fans love them. 52.5 is pretty low. I think they could get up to like 54.5, 55, like a full potentially 3-game swing if they got to 55. It also opened 50.5, I think, earlier in the summer. So it's already moved up some. But that'd be one of my picks. And it's why it's my second biggest play.
What number are you most disappointed with? Like, what number were you looking to bet that – they kind of beat you to the punch.
I was hoping, I know we mentioned this briefly towards the beginning. I was praying the Spurs were going to be like 41 again. And like, are they going to win half their games with Popovich when they bring DeJounte Murray back? Derek White kind of made a leap in the playoffs last year. That backcourt could be the best defensive backcourt in the NBA. They added two guys.
Your guy from Summer
League. Damari Carroll. They drafted Lucas Samanich, and then Trey Lyles is the guy once the Bertans
got
traded.
Your boy from Summer League.
Then Lonnie Walker the fourth. Yeah. Yep. So I think they're a better roster. They won 48 games last year. It's Popovich. I'm not betting against Pop until it happens or until he retires. So I was hoping for something more like 41. I still think 43.5 is a worthwhile play. Smaller. But if it was 41.5 again, which was hoping, last year, I was going to bet.
I was hoping T-Wolves would be like 40.
And just go under.
Yeah.
T-Wolves unders. 35 is pretty sharp number there.
Yeah. Yep. All right, my cool. man. Good seeing you. Thanks for doing this. And exciting times across the board. And we'll have much more frequent podcasts coming up.
Pay that man his money.
Thanks to Bob Lee and thanks to Preston Johnson. Always good to talk NBA. As you can see, we are both junkies. We love this stuff. So fun times. Troy, I talked about it earlier, how I'm just not high up on the food chain in terms of podcast food chain. You left in the middle of things, leaving me here. What if I'm dropping F-bombs? You don't bleep them out, and then I get fired.
I'm sorry. I had to go lend a hand to bigger talent. I had to go hang out with Buster Olney for a bit, so I'm sorry I had to leave you behind.
I know. It's okay. Buster Olney is a friend of the program, but, I mean, I'm a little worried that if I were just some reckless host.
Should I not be trusting you? Are you giving me a reason to not trust you?
Well, you know, the microphone's in front of you a lot. Many hours of the day, you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, I trust myself most of the time. I'm just going to say that.
Okay. Well, I don't know. You're leaving me a little skeptical here. I might have to go through and actually listen to this show.
Yeah, you might have to. Yeah, yeah. Instead of just pushing a button and leaving.
Exactly.
You might actually have to pay attention. God forbid. All right, my man. Well, it's good connecting. Thanks for your assistance here. And thanks to everyone listening. We appreciate your loyal viewership and on Daily Wager, listenership. We're going to have a lot of announcements coming up regarding the show. Also, the pedicure thing still exists. Send me those pictures. Tweet at Doug ESPN. I will get the t-shirts out. I've been very delinquent. I was on vacation. I was doing other stuff. But really, those are just excuses. And we all know excuses. Everybody has one, right? So apologies there. But keep reaching out. We have a new segment called Daily Diamond Dog where you tweet in a picture of your dog. We'll get it on the show. And we have a lot of other fun stuff. So thanks to everyone. And we'll catch you back here on the next Behind the Bets podcast.